Welcome to Hot Yoga Radio. It's the 2nd of September 2018 and I'm taking my constitutional. It's a Sunday afternoon. But this morning I watched a short YouTube video about universal basic income. It was put on by a podcaster who I find quite lucid called Mexi. This is something I've been thinking about for some time. And on this occasion, it set off a train of thought around scarcity and plenty. So what I want to do in this podcast is to improvise with these the thoughts that were stimulated. And they're kind of fairly rough and rather abstract. And hopefully discipline them into a little bit of shape and form and coherence. So I'm going to call the podcast Universal Basic Income, Scarcity and Plenty. Now, Mexi makes the point that Universal Basic Income, UBI, is coming because of the rapid development and deployment of automation and artificial intelligence. And economists of every kind of stripe is predicting a 50% reduction in jobs over the next 10 to 20 years. And it is inevitable, from what I can see. And a part of the logic of capital, in which competing enterprises will look for gains in productivity by the employment of technology. Of course, you also, some commentators have pointed out, will get a backlash. Already existing industries will attempt to preserve themselves rather than be disrupted by a new technology or even rendered obsolete. So a good example of this is in the days of the invention of the motor car. There was enough lobbying power from carriage makers, bridle makers, saddle makers, horse breeders to get a law passed which said that a motor car could only go at 4 miles an hour and had to be preceded by a man with a red flag. And, you know, the whole phenomenon of Luddism as well, in which the working class will oppose a new technology that's going to put people out of work. But nevertheless, there is an impetus and an imperative for enterprises, if you've got true competition, to seek advantage through the employment of technology. And it's the history speaks to it. So I think Mexi's right, it's coming. It's probably coming faster than we think as well. But the contradiction which is brought into stark relief by this unfolding of automation, robotics, is that if you're needing fewer workers to produce your products, and you've got a high unemployment, you're going to see a drop in demand. Because if people are employed and they've got very little disposable income, they're not going to buy the products that are now being produced in huge amounts through processes of automation. So it's necessary for people to have money to spend. So I think this was realised in 1929-1930, and the whole kind of Keynesian idea of priming the economy getting people to work on government projects, building dams, painting murals, building infrastructure, came out of the realisation that the market's not going to correct itself. But instead we'll go into a downward spiral if people who are unemployed have no disposable income. And from what I see, like modern welfare capitalism, is less to do with the capitalists at last finding their kind heart, and more to do with the fact that you need to keep demand up for the products of industry. So this is the contradiction that's being hit, and this is why people of all kinds of stripe are suggesting a universal basic income. Apparently even psychopathic Chicago school economists like Hayek and Milton Friedman, who make it a point of honour to be mean-spirited and disinterested in any kind of welfare for the less fortunate in society, nevertheless suggested some kind of UBI, or they called it a negative income tax. So people of all kinds of stripes are seeing the problem, demand failure due to automation, and proposing something like UBI as a possible response to that contradiction. In the podcast in question, there was another proposal mentioned, and that was, I forget the name of the guy that mentioned, French sociologist, economist. I'm sorry, I forgot his name.
Come on.
And it's called Salaire à Vie, Salary for Life. And this is a kind of a command economy solution in which everybody gets a salary for life. There are no wages for work, etc., etc. Salary for life, and it depends on your age. It goes up as you go up towards retirement, but it depends on your age, qualifications, what you actually contribute to the economy, and I don't know, levels of you know what the differentials would be. I suppose there is an open question, and it's a bit creepy because it is a command economy. But I suppose UBI could equally be some kind of command economy, because it would have to be administered by the government. So for anarchists, left anarchists, right anarchists, there's a problem with it as well, you know, because it's somehow got to be administered. I suppose one solution might be that it could be automated as well. And certainly I know of one group which called which does a UBI cryptocurrency. It's obviously not worth a great deal, because we need a fairly large community using it on a daily basis for it to have serious value. It does have some value, and it is traded. It's called Mana, MANNA. You can sign up for it, and you get your quota of Mana every month into your Mana wallet, and you could trade it with other people, or you could give it away, you could do what you liked with it, I suppose. But I mean, something like that might be a solution. Now, I think it kind of hits some problems in the short term, obviously. Getting for something to get bootstrapped like that, I imagine, is going to be tricky. But at least there's the ideas out there, and some pilots and so forth. So, yeah, well, universal basic income, I should have said what it is. It is the idea that everybody just gets a universal basic income. They can go and work if they want to and earn on top of it. And it's enough to get by on. I think Greens have been suggesting this for years, and making the point they could unleash a great deal of creativity. And it would replace welfare, you know, I suppose people with certain extreme needs, certain levels of disability would possibly need more, and that would be fine, of course. But your basic citizens all get the same. Maybe like a negative income tax, you could even say, you know. And it would save the money on the administration of welfare, and also the punitive aspects of it. Certainly in modern Britain, there's been a scapegoating of the poor and the people who are less able to sustain their lives, who do end up, for one reason and another, depending on welfare. And it's very easy to scapegoat these people and to mobilise resentment against them. And Tory governments are not averse to that. It is their kind of core ideological idea that it's respectable and justifiable not to be generous and not to be kind. And of course, Hayek and Friedman made this a point of doctrine. And Mrs. Thatcher was very much caught up with it and headed up an ideological attack on welfare dependence as a means of dividing and ruling the working class. So what do you say about Margaret Thatcher? She was a master ideologue. And then the real master stroke of the Falklands War. And that's a woman's in power for 11 years. That's the rough background then. And there are all kinds of objections to it and all kinds of pros and cons, and I dare say if it were ever put into practice on any kind of large scale, we'd discover some consequences that were impossible to foresee, which is usually the case for something that would be such a radical systemic change to the economy. Now it set me thinking about money per se again, and it struck me that under conditions of plenty, and this is what automation promises, at least in principle. Of course it can pan out in all kinds of dystopian directions, but if it were to pan out in a utopian direction, the automation artificial intelligence scenario would mean that there was plenty of everything for everybody. Now, the technology already exists for this cornucopian future to be feasible. It would entail everything working in closed cycles, a lot of recycling, no waste, and so forth. And the computer technology will lend itself to managing such systems. So, obviously, there are enormous practical difficulties. And the world is in such a mess, and it's so unequal. Development is so unequal, and we have this political oligopoly going on, and global warming has been addressed, but not really adequately. Population is growing, and I mean, there's more problems than you can shake a stick at on every front. But nevertheless, at least technically, at least in principle, the tech exists and is getting better to make a cornucopian future possible. Now, in that scenario, money would be unnecessary. What would be the point of it? and we wouldn't be thinking about universal basic income or anything. But there is a reason for money to continue to exist. And there will be a struggle, I imagine, over this scenario. The reason for money to continue to exist in a world of plenty, cornucopian surplus, would be to regulate people's behaviour by regulating their access to goods and to the means of sustaining life. But why in this scenario of plenty of luxury communism would anybody bother? Well, the answer is power. To exert power. And having a money system which was controlled, as we have now, by some oligopoly, it would be possible to reward and punish through relative availability to the necessities of life and other goods. By saying how much available income they would have by right. And the thing we need to remember about power is that it's the ultimate drug. And people will go for it. They will, even under conditions of cornucopian excess. Unless we have a really robust culture that enhances life in other directions, we're going to get attempts to accrue power. And keeping the money system going would be the way to do that. Money under such a system would be a form of social credit, as we see being attempted in China at the moment. And the idea there is that you get brownie points for being a good citizen, particularly as this can be picked up through your internet presence, your digital footprint. And this, if it's good, entitles you to access to privileges like being able to go abroad or get an education in a prestigious university, things like that. And of course, if you're naughty, you get black marks and privileges are withdrawn and your life is made miserable. So a means of controlling behaviour through social credits and money in a world of plenty could still persist, even though we wouldn't need it for exchange, particularly, you know, in principle, would act as a form of social credit. Your access to credit or funding or to money would be a direct correlate of how good or naughty you've been according to the powers that be. Now, it's said fairly frequently that people derive meaning in life from work. I actually think that this isn't 100% true. Like David Graeber, I think that most jobs are shit jobs or bullshit jobs. But people do derive significance from satisfying work, but also from the crack, what we call the crack. The community of workers is far more important to people than the work that they do, very often, particularly in the old industrial scenarios. That was where the value came from. People were sad to leave a job, not because they missed pulling a lever 100 times an hour for 12 hours a day for 6 days a week, but because they missed their friends and their community and the culture that they built amongst them, the humour, the brass bands, the working men's clubs and all the rest of it. And I'm afraid I'm still with Nietzsche, despite what Jordan Peterson said about it. in the light of the death of God, we make our own meaning. And in the light of the death of work, we make our own meaning. And that this is not only possible, but desirable. And people who say, who emphasise the gaining of individual feelings of meaning from the work that we do, missing out alienation. They're not factoring alienation. And alienation is, in one sense, the failure of employment, work, jobs, to give us meaning, even though we can derive meaning from the community. And in a cornucopian society, if we're going to avoid the playing of power games as the means for deriving meaning, nothing like being the most powerful to feel that your life's meaningful. If we're to avoid that, which is fucking dystopian as hell, there needs to be in place a robust culture in which we derive meaning from art and from solving problems, because human problems are not going to go away. Doing research, say, to cure cancer or whatever, but problem solving. And self-exploration for those who've got a bent for it. Because if you want to do that particular kind of thing, you need space and time. But having a universal basic income, there it is, it's there. If you so choose, you can go away in a cave and meditate. But also, developing a culture of caring for each other. So that the way we care for each other through life's difficulties is raised to a very high art. Love. All of these things give us meaning. And they all work better, if I can put it like that, if we're not too alienated in our lives. In other words, we're not having to do bullshit jobs. And if we don't have to worry too much about security, sustainability, and if we've got the time and the space, then a kind of cornucopian society could make space for such a culture. And in fact, I'd go so far as to say that such a culture is a necessity for a cornucopian culture not to turn into a nightmare. So, money gains its function from scarcity. Money is about the distribution of resources. Having money gives you a greater access to the necessities of life and the luxuries of life. Having no money deprives you of those, and these all work in the context of scarcity. In the context of plenty, cornucopian plenty, which technological developments promise, at least in principle, there is a danger of money being preserved rather than abandoned, because it provides the means for an oligopoly to exert their will to power over the population en masse. I realise that this is utopian and dystopian speculation and highly abstract. The YouTube video which I watched was really sort of quite detailed in examining the possibilities of how a universal basic income might pan out and what consequences it might have, negative and positive. And I've actually gone in a bit of a different direction here and just flown off into some kind of high abstraction. I do ever think that that is useful, and I think these categories, scarcity and plenty, extremely fruitful and useful. when we're thinking about how life is to be lived and the economic aspects of that question. Thanks for listening.